Welcome to Pod Forest, where forest pros discuss forest woes. Our goal is to communicate with private landowners on a variety of forest health issues to support management and stewardship of your lands. In this podcast, we'll be discussing important topics in forest health with experts in multiple fields. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy this episode of the Pro Forest Pod Forest.
Everybody, in theory, likes bugs. We just have to open it in them.
All right, well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of the Pro Forest Pod Forest. Today, we are joined by Dr. Yuri Holzer. Yuri is the forest entomologist here at the University of Florida School of Forest, Fisheries, and Geomatic Sciences. Really popular guy when it comes to the bug world. Talk about all different things, bugs. Really grateful to have him. He manages an extensive collection, including a lot of ambrosia beetles. Yuri, we're very thankful to have you here this morning and looking forward to this conversation.
Tyler, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Bugs, what kind of name is that? Let's start with some classification, right? Bugs are a terrible word for insects. Bugs really actually mean something, and it's a group of insects, the sap-sucking insects.
The true bugs.
The true bugs, exactly. So, yes, I am the forest entomologist for the University of Florida, the bug guy in forestry, and let's get started.
Well, Yuri, I'm somebody that really likes bugs. Well, let me rephrase that based on what you just said. I really like Hymenoptera. I like the social insects. I like bees and ants. I also like Lepidoptera, the butterflies and the moths. I cannot remember the true insects off the top of my head. It also starts with an H.
Heteroptera.
But in my experience, it seems that people like some insects, we'll say that, some insects, they don't care much for arachnids, but there are plenty of other insects that they really don't like. So in your experience, you've done a lot of stuff with Extension. You've talked to a lot of people. You do various programs. Do you think that people generally like insects, or is there a sort of pushback?
So I'm having hard times with that question, to be honest, because liking something or not is usually not a thing that's immovable. It's a process of learning about stuff. So when we're born, we all love creatures. We all love animals and plants, and then the educational system eventually beats it out of us. Kids in kindergarten or elementary school age, they're all obsessed with caterpillars. Now is a great season, by the way. Now, early spring, caterpillars are literally raining from trees. They're amazing, cuddly little fuzzy creatures. And whenever my experience in schools is that whenever a child shows a caterpillar to a teacher, they hear, "Oh, gross, yuck, throw it away. Don't bring it up again." I think we did it to ourselves. Insects are amazing, and they are an absolutely indispensable part of what the green stuff around us. Your forest, our environment, the way the world works. Absolutely indispensable. And we are here somehow pretending like we're able to separate ourselves from them and make a judgment whether we like them or not. I think we need to go back, really far back, to fairly fundamental education about us humans and our place in the natural economy, in how the greater world works. And then we'll start seeing that there's no question whether we like or not like bugs. It's like, do you like air? You know, we need them.
You know, living in Florida my whole life, I remember driving, just down 192 or some other highway, and you couldn't go very far without getting your car absolutely pancaked with insects that you hit. Like, your windshield is covered, your bumper is covered. And there are certainly times of year in certain places where that is still the case. But by and large, it seems that that's not happening as often. And to some people, that's a good thing, right? That's less stuff they have to clean off their car. It's unpleasant, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's more of a symptom of a particularly disturbing problem of broader insect declines. Because, yes, while it might be nice not to have to scrub a bunch of flies and various things off your windshield every time you try and drive down a highway, like you said, we need those insects. Like, they're a sort of foundational component of our food webs, of ecological functions, and, of course, ecosystem services. You had mentioned kind of this comparison of, like, do you like air and how important insects are? So in what sort of capacity are insects usually considered important when with respect to forest health in particular?
Yeah, so I will I will be able to talk about that for about 3 hours, but I'm going to have to cut it down to a couple of minutes. But before we go to that, you mentioned the windshield phenomenon. That's real. You may remember that just a couple of decades ago, that was really a thing. Wherever you went in a car or on a motorcycle with a helmet, you would get stuff splattered on all the time. And it's really not happening as much. Most people in their lifetime have experienced a very dramatic decline of the abundance of bugs around us. The explanations are actually relatively simple. If you think about being an insect and being an insect in an increasingly urbanized environment like in Florida, there is lots of light everywhere that confuses you. There is lots of sound everywhere that conceals the sound of your mates. There is a lot of chemical pollution that we don't even smell. But turns out that a lot of these molecules coming out of diesel exhaust pipes and so on are actually dramatically interfering with the natural chemistry of the woods and the flowers. And bugs can find not only themselves, but their food sources. And so their numbers are really diminishing. And it's not just the love for turf that a lot of people have, which essentially is an ecological desert. But we don't have to expound on that here. That's a whole different chapter. But even in forests, a lot of these environmental stressors are now ubiquitous. Whether you're in the middle of the city or whether you're in the middle of what you would consider a nice, you know, pine land, and there are many fewer bugs than there used to be. And we're seeing that not just on your windshield. We're seeing that in the number of birds around us. We're seeing that in the number of lizards and snakes and all these higher levels of the food chain. We're seeing that in the pollination efficiency. You know, like, Tyler, you ask, what do we need bugs for? As an example, pollination is an obvious service. And I think perhaps everybody who likes to eat fruits or vegetables would agree with me. You know, now we have to drag around thousands and thousands of honeybees, which are not from here, which are an industrial animal brought over from Europe, because our own biological diversity here can't catch up with the needs of pollination. It's like, imagine you're building a cathedral and you're asking, what's the function of this particular brick? Well, together they built a cathedral. The same thing is with insects. Together, all this diversity together builds the cathedral that's called our environment. And that's what's holding it together. And once you start disassembling it one by one, it eventually crumbles. So you can see that in many urban forests where there are no birds. You're not quite seeing that yet with our environment around, you know, cities. But trust me, there is good data and good personal evidence showing that it's nothing like it used to be just 50 years ago, just before all the light and chemical pollution.
So you'd mentioned the love bugs being an invasive species, and we don't need to focus on love bugs in particular. I do, however, love what do you want to call it, urban legend that UF created them and released them. But
yeah, right.
We didn't do that. But
no, we didn't. They're from Mexico. They came through Texas. Yes.
So what could be some of these other perhaps problematic insects? Because, I mean, we're thinking of insect declines broadly speaking, but we're still seeing invasive species popping up. And we had Dave Coyle on here last time who talked extensively about invasive species, mentioned how they, you know, can travel through economic means, through, you know, cargo ships crossing the ocean, all that kind of stuff. They enter through ports. And, you know, start wreaking havoc. But when we think about forests and, you know, in any sort of capacity here in the Southeast, what are some of these problematic insects that people should probably be aware of?
Right. So I would say there are two different ways how you could frame an insect problematic. One is, if you own woodland, you're probably concerned about our perfectly native bark beetles eating your trees. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And if you're wondering about the invasive insects, meaning insects from somewhere else that don't really belong here. Yes, you know, people call that biological invasions. I don't really like that word very much because it seems to suggest that it's the biology that's invading our world somehow, which obviously it's the exact opposite. It's these are creatures that people brought here. Our commerce, your shopping on Amazon that's bringing packages of electronics from China, they're packaged often in woodpecking material, or the cut flowers that are coming from South America, they're all, a lot of them are bringing bugs with them. You know, it turns out that live plant industry is the number one source of invasive insects in and plant diseases in North America. So all of that is people bringing this stuff here. It's us, our commerce, our shopping. So it's not really the biology invading our world. It's us homogenizing the world by bringing everything everywhere. And then, yeah, we see some ecological clashes. You know, you may have heard of the Dutch elm disease. Our elms, North American elms, were wiped out by an invasive fungus distributed or vectored by an insect. Hemlocks are dying. Now our red bays and avocados are suffering from another bug that's carrying a pathogen. It's, you know, ash trees are dying because of the emerald ash borer. It's like we can continue on and on and on. We've brought a lot of insects here that don't belong here, and our trees, or plants, if you wish, aren't used to them. And so they can't defend themselves, and these bugs, they don't know they are somewhere else. They didn't change their behavior or anything. They're still the same. They don't even know they're on a different continent, obviously. They just do what they know to do. They eat, and they reproduce. But we brought them to our environment where there's nothing to limit them. And so, again, it's this homogenization of the world that we're making that's causing a lot of problems. So far, in terms of pines, interestingly, we have not seen very many invasive pests. Now, we are certainly seeing emergence of a lot of native pathogens, particularly pathogens like fungi that live here in the southeast U.S., but now with a lot of strange weather and a lot of precipitation and a lot of weather stress on the trees, they're emerging as sort of pathogens on a scale that we have not seen before. But not many insects. Now, does that mean that we will never get a bug that eats our pines from Asia? Well, we don't know. In some ways, you could consider yourself lucky that we haven't gotten one yet, because a lot of other trees did get pests, or multiple, that are hammering them right now. But let's get back to where it all started. You know, it turns out that in an ecosystem that's not a pine plantation, the sun pine beetle is a remarkably rare creature. It's so rare, actually, in fact, that my lab is trying to do all kinds of research on it, and we are having hard times finding it. In situations, however, where we pack as many pines as possible together per square acre, we're creating an interesting habitat. Imagine, like, creating a cornfield instead of a meadow, right? You pack it with a lot of really good, juicy, same-age trees. It's like a buffet for these beetles. So once one tree gets hit, they multiply, and they have easy, easy time jumping on the next tree, and then from that tree to three other trees, and so on, and now the outbreak goes. Very easy solution, though, and we already know how to solve this. Thin your forest. That's all. We don't have to employ any chemistry. We don't have to employ any pheromones, none of these technological contraptions. Thinning works. Prescribed fire works. And interestingly, now that a couple of decades after Southern forestry has adopted some of these practices, there are virtually no outbreaks of the sun pine beetle. So the big newsworthy outbreaks of thousands of acres from the 60s and 70s, we're not seeing those anymore. We learned how to thin. So let's keep doing it.
So a success story when it comes to managing a pest. But what are some of these other sort of situations where we don't have quite a successful outcome just yet? And perhaps what are we trying to do to manage some of these other pests?
That's, yeah, great question. Tyler, I have to say, let's rescale the question once again. So I often get this question. My tree is dying. It's got bugs in it. I see you know, bug poop coming out. What do I spray them with? How do I control these insects? And 99% of time, and I'm not kidding, 99% of time, I have to say, folks, that's not the right question. The tree has died for a different reason. Insects don't kill trees. And here's why. A tree, a living tree, is a dangerous place to live. It's got full set of chemistry that is designed, that's evolved to kill insects and fungi. It has a thick bark. It has a living cells that are ready to pounce, chemically speaking, upon an intruder. So, you know, if it was true that insects kill trees, we would not have any trees. There's obviously way many more bugs of way many more species than trees out there. And yet we'll still have forests full of trees. So let's think about it. Insects don't kill trees. If you see insects inside a tree, it means that the tree has suffered from something else. So insects is a symptom of a tree stress or a tree injury or something like that. And then, at that moment, you as a tree manager or owner need to start digging, need to start being a detective and, you know, call me up and we'll talk about it. But the insects are telling us something about the tree condition, and that's what we need to address. Spraying insects with chemicals will surely kill them, yes, but that's not the point. It's like putting Band-Aid on cancer. Makes no sense. We have to reframe the entire understanding of how insects and trees interact. So I mentioned the sun pine beetle. That really, I'm not kidding, that's the only beetle that can create an outbreak in our forests. There are 130 other bark beetle species in the southeast. 130, a little bit more actually these days, with all the invasives. None of them does anything. There are a couple of species, all of which are invasives, that would bore a hole into a tree in your orchard, fruit trees. I mean, we're not talking about pines anymore. There's a couple of the so-called ambrosia beetles that go into twigs or small seedlings if they are overwatered or stricken by a late frost or something like that. Again, the tree has to be suffering first before these bugs go in. And then there is this one case of an ambrosia beetle that carries a pathogenic fungus. So we mentioned avocados and our red bay. Red bay is a small shrub, well, it could be bigger, tree that used to be really common in Florida and in the region. And now they're essentially gone because of this insect, this ambrosia beetle, one of about 30 species that carries a pathogenic fungus. That's one, right? So again, the statement that insects are a problem, they kill trees, almost none of them do. So once we are seeing a tree problem, tree stress, tree dying, the first thing we have to do is to identify what bugs are they, the ones that are coming out or that you're seeing or the symptoms you're seeing. And that helps us narrow down the possibilities of what might be happening with your tree. I can tell you a vastly more common source of tree death is turf management compared to any insects. Is, you know, construction, is a pavement, is a trampling over roots, is a sudden changes in hydrology for the trees and so on. The kind of stuff that we do in our landscapes that kills vastly more trees than insects. And yes, every one of those dead trees then has insects in it. Every single pine that dies in Florida will attract bark beetles after it dies. You know, you're seeing vultures on a corpse. Well, the vultures didn't kill the deer. The deer was killed by something else, so we cannot blame the vultures. It's the same thing with bark beetles.
So I like the idea of it being I shouldn't say idea, but the comparison of it being a symptom rather than perhaps the root cause, pun not intended. So when we think about the sort of abundance of quote-unquote pest insects, when they kind of show up, it's like, well, that's not the root of the problem. This is just a result of a problem, whatever it might be. With invasive species, are they still a symptom of a problem, or are they perhaps a driver of a problem?
Good question. So again, it's the trade that brings these bugs in that is the root of the problem, right? So unless we start working with our legislators and working with companies that are bringing a cargo unchecked to our country, we're not going to stop this problem. Again, spraying invasive bugs in your yard is peanuts compared to the size of the problem, compared to the avalanche of invasive bugs and fungi that we're facing at our ports. That is what we need to do as a collective, as a country. We have to be better at protecting our borders. That's the root problem. If you do have issues in your on your land, and there's a big difference between, you know, an urban yard lot, orchard perhaps, or and a pine tree plantation. There's a big difference in the kinds of symptoms of insects you need to pay attention to. In a city, the stresses on trees are substantially bigger, and sometimes you don't even see them. We're not really good at understanding how trees live underground, for example. But, you know, their roots are very gentle part of the tree, and they require a lot of happy underground habitat. There are a lot of pathogens, root pathogens, that live in the ground and that could attack trees that are compromised. That happens all the time. There is a lot of reasons why your individual trees in your yard could die. And again, once you see a symptom of some insect presence, the first thing I recommend is to figure out what it is. And the easiest way is to go on Facebook and look up Southern Forest and Tree Health Diagnostics Group. Southern Forest and Tree Health Diagnostics Group on Facebook. It's a bunch of us forest and tree health experts happy to answer your questions. You know, in some ways, in the old days of extension, our job would be to look or wait for a phone call. That doesn't really work as much with thousands and thousands of people now doing facing the same environmental pressures and invasive insects. It's really better to go online and look up what people have already posted or what people are struggling with. Or just ask, post your photos, and those are often really sufficient for us to tell you what it is. So that would be my first recommendation. University of Florida EDIS publications are amazing. There's lots of information out there that's ready packaged for you, the landowner or the tree owner. There certainly are resources out there. And if you really can't figure it out, just call me up.
And I kind of want to keep this thread going of identifying insects and what to do when you find them and all that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, yeah, there are some that are, or I shouldn't say there are some, there are plenty that are native. They're just existing in balance, doing what they do. But again, these invasive insects, where perhaps some might argue we have a responsibility to try and manage them, contain their spread as best as we can. Some might say that's futile or what have you, considering the rate of commerce and just how prolific some of these species can be. So when we're dealing with invasive insects, how do we generally manage for them?
Oh, Tyler, that's a hard question because, again, it depends on that specific bug, specific species of insect. If it's the Asian longhorn beetle, yeah, we can do it. If we, you know, with some elbow grease, with some investment, we could certainly eliminate the host tree for a while. And then if the bug has nowhere to breed, it'll go away. Yeah, with a really responsible quarantine. Quarantine is pretty important. Don't drag firewood anywhere. You know, I'm not sure how widespread that message is. Perhaps I live in a bubble where everybody knows this, but if not, folks, keep firewood where you bought it. Keep firewood where you harvested, because wood is a living thing. It's a great environment for a lot of creatures, and once you collect a chunk of a wood somewhere, notice that it's often crawling with insects, and if you bring that to a different ecosystem, you know, you could be spreading an invasive pest. So don't do that. Let's keep wood where it originated. Otherwise, you know, there aren't that many invasive insects that are within our power to manage. In long term, we could absolutely invest in more research and development of resistant varieties of certain crops that we really care about. That's really important. Really, ultimately, the two most important things we need to do as a society, and you being a part of it as a landowner, a very, very important foundational part of it, is one, like I already said, limit the input, the incoming rate of these bugs. But second, maintain diversity on the landscape. Because, you know, we don't really know what the next one's going to be. We don't know if the next invasive insect is going to attack our oaks, our pines, our magnolias. We have no idea. People are always surprised when it happens. When the American chestnut was wiped out from our landscape, it was a major surprise. When elms were wiped out, same thing. When the hemlocks are now dying because of the hemlock woolly adelgid, it's a big surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise anymore. We've had so many trees, individual tree species, dying because of invasive insects or diseases. The reason we still have our oaks and our pines and our magnolias is not because they're somehow special. We still didn't get a bug that attacks them. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. We just, you know, I'll give you an example. Not everybody loves sweet gum, but sweet gum is a really important timber and really important part of our ecosystems. There are numerous insects and birds and other creatures that need sweet gum seeds and sweet gum leaves and sweet gum wood for their food or habitat. It's a really important tree in nature, and it's also an increasingly important tree for bioenergy business. For, you know, people are grinding it into pellets, shipping it to Japan for energy generation. It's becoming economically important. Now, my lab discovered a little beetle in China that kills American sweet gum. We don't want this beetle here. Imagine if that beetle immigrated to the United States, or I should say, if somebody packaged a box in China with wood made of the Chinese sweet gum, and the beetle made it to the port of Savannah or Miami and spread across the Southeast. Imagine if within a decade we lost our sweet gums. That would be another terrifying ecological disaster. And people would say, oh, that's a surprise. Well, it shouldn't be a surprise. We already know about this bug. We know there are insects that are potentially a threat to our species. So, like I said, the first and most important thing, we need to make sure that we're protecting our borders against these organisms that don't belong here. Second, we need to be alert. What I'm finding out is what I would call plant blindness. A lot of people don't really pay attention to the green around them. That's not cool. I think if you see a dying tree, especially a bunch of them, it could be totally normal. But if there is suddenly a lot of trees dying, that's usually not normal. That's usually not something you would, you know, glance over. In that case, let someone know. That could be a big news. And the third and really important thing we have to maintain is what I already mentioned, is a diversity on the landscape. Because if we put all our eggs in one basket and that those eggs get wiped out, we are left with nothing. So our industries and our landscape protection policies, and I would argue people's own economic models, should be diversified. Because then if you grow only one crop and you happen to get that invasive pest, what happens? And if you think that it's unlikely, well, ask the citrus folks. 30 years ago, citrus was booming in Florida, and now most of the industry is toast because of one invasive bacterium. It's a disease that's spread around by insects. Both of them are invasive from Asia. A super powerful, you know, industry and economic engine of Florida, and where it is now. It can absolutely happen. So let's pay attention and let's diversify what do we grow here in Florida.
So a very much a multi-pronged, sort of holistic in a way, approach to trying to manage and deal with these different species. It reminds me again, I brought up Dave's talk a few times already, but he had mentioned something that really caught our eye last week, saying green is not always good, right? Because you could have invasive plants and all that kind of stuff. So what one person thinks might be healthy could, in actuality, be very... quite the opposite.
Oh yeah, we see that all the time. I liken invasive plants to plastic. They're worse than plastic.
Interesting.
Because not only they are here and don't support anything else in the ecosystem, they don't support any bugs or birds or anything, they proliferate. Plastic at least stays in place.
plastic at least stays in place. I'll have to think about that the next time I'm ripping up some invasive plant, or if I see someone be like, man, this is worse than plastic. I'll deal with plastic over invasive plant every day.
Yeah. You know, let's stop managing the individual insects or species. We really need to manage our landscape, manage ourselves, manage our policies, because it's a bigger problem than that one bug on your tree.
So it's a social, ecological, economic, very, very complicated issue, which we kind of talked about last time as well.
Can I say, sorry, one thing?
Yeah, of course.
That I just wanted to say, yes, it seems daunting, almost impossible. It seems complicated. But I would say it seems complicated because we're not used to it. It seems complicated because we haven't really tried, honestly. Once people start thinking about it in a different way, I think it'll become our second nature. Once we start thinking about ourselves as a part of the bigger processes around us, then we discover that we can actually help it. It's not that difficult. You just take good care of your lawn. You just take good care of your land. Take good care of your property. Pay attention. Communicate with us, folks who study this, and we can really solve a lot of problems. It doesn't have to be always applying chemistry to individual trees.
I think that's a good spot to end on. Very hopeful note that, you know, some of these problems that we face, they are very wicked and very complex problems, but that doesn't mean that they're impossible to solve.
Yep.
Thank you, Yuri, very much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody out there who's listening. And we will see you next time.
Happy to do it. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. For more information, head on over to the ProForest website at proforesthealth.org. For any questions you may have, or to stay updated on all things ProForest, check out our social media at ProForestUF on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Episode hosted by Dr. Tyler Carney. This podcast was edited by Ben Ginkars Davies. The ProForest PodForest is brought to you by ProForest, proactive forest health and resilience at the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.